Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, for another edition of our Straight Talk program presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor, pardon me, today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Piedmont Medical Center is with us today, a community built on care, and you can find out more about them online at piedmontmedicalcenter.com. So when was the last time you were in Rwanda? Well, I've never been there. I don't think anybody in this restaurant's been there, but two people from Rock Hill who have been there have just returned, and we have them here on the Straight Talk show today, Jenny Koster and Jean-Paul Duchesme is with us today, and we're going to be talking about this trip and this trek and why they went and all that kind of stuff. But let's start with some introductions, ladies first. Jenny, tell us a little bit about you, if you would.
Okay, I am from Rock Hill, specifically the Neely's Creek Leslie community. And I attend Neely's Creek ARP Church and am married to Duck Koster. Nobody ever calls him Donald. It's always Duck. We have two adult kids, Zach, his wife Abby, our granddaughter Adley, and then I have a daughter, Hannah, who's married to Winston Craven, and their child, Jasper.
My gosh. That keeps you busy, right?
It does.
Good for you. All right, this gentleman, I met him the... couple of months ago when I was out at the Neely's Creek annual fish fry, which was very good, by the way. His name is Jean-Paul Duchesme. Well, I'm getting close enough. All right. So, Jenny, tell me, how did this whole thing between Neely's Creek and Rwanda get all hooked up? How did that happen?
Well, we had a visiting missionary to come and speak at Neely's Creek back in 2012. And his name was Benjamin Mushahuki, and he's from Rwanda. He had come to Erskine to get a graduate degree there, and he came talking about his vision of what he would like to do with the children in Rwanda, and that was to build a school.
Right.
And so that night, actually, it was in 2011, sorry. 2011, he came and taught our church. They got up a group that evening that was interested in going. My husband and son Zach were part of that group that went initially in 2011 on what we would call a vision trip. And then the next summer in 2012 was whenever I started. Zach went with me again that year. And so that's how it all got started. Benjamin came, issued an invitation, come and see, and so we did. We went, we saw, we prayed over volcanic rock in that area on which they built the school.
Oh.
And in 2012 is whenever we met JP. He was one of our translators, as he said, just very personable. And the rest is history.
So, JP, when you met them, you decided to come to the United States?
Oh, they convinced me to. I was curious. I used to see United States in the movie and all that. So I was always curious, fascinated about their creativity and all the, you know, the world, the how U.S. is way advanced. So I was very curious. But at the same time, the first time I met with the team from Neely's Creek, it became like a family to me. It was easy decision to make, you know, to come and visit. So that's how things started.
So you came and visited.
Yes.
And then you decided to stay?
I went back.
You went back?
Yeah, I went back. But it happened to be on the same team. There was a young lady, her name is Kathleen, so who is happened to be my wife now.
Uh-huh.
Then one thing led to another. I came and met her family, a wonderful family, and we decided, like, why not? We decided to go get married. Then after, like, 2013, in December, we got married in Neely's Creek.
And then you moved here permanently.
Yeah, that's correct.
So how did that go over with your family?
Uh, The way I grew up, I went to college in Kenya, in Nairobi. So I was one of the family member who always travel. I was always on the move. I think it was for them, I think they expected that. So they knew that I can't be in the one place all the time. So I always have to, I was always on the move. So it was kind of easy. For them, they didn't have any problem.
Was your English always this good?
Not really. It's actually by the time I graduated from high school, I could not speak probably one or two words in English. I went to French school, and when I graduated from high school, I was like, I think I can learn English. I have some friends who spoke English. I love the language, and I started teaching myself the language, and I fascinated. Then I decided to go to college in Kenya, which is it's an English-speaking country. I did my undergraduate in English program. I look back, I'm like, what was I thinking about? But it was a great decision. It was a great move. It stretched me. It taught me how to, learn and grow. That's how I developed my English.
So now your native language in Rwanda is what, French?
It's Kinyarwanda. Then I went to school and I did French. I did school in French and elementary school and high school. Then English came about. I speak Swahili because Swahili is kind of regional language that's spoken in East Africa, Tanzania, Kenya, Uganda, and DRC, and Rwanda, and Burundi. So I ended up with so many language.
So now that you live in South Carolina, have you learned redneck yet? Okay, I don't know that.
Okay. I'm still learning.
Okay, Jenny. So Neely's Creek goes over. You see what you see. Mm-hmm. And did you have any idea as a church what you were going to do? You were just invited to come see.
Right. And we did. We went to see. We caught on to the vision that Benjamin had. He had some land. He wanted to build a school on it. It was on volcanic rock. They had been digging up the rock. And like I said, we prayed over the rocks that year in 2012. And then whenever we went back in 2013, they had started to build the school. And it started very meager beginnings. We had children who met with us in the local church, which is situated not far from where the school that was built is. And so we maybe had 80 children that year that we went. We did some teaching of English, first of all, that first year in 2013. Then we went back, and every year since, we have done a vacation Bible school for these children.
Right.
The school has grown physically in buildings as well as with children. They serve now just under 500 children the school.
So now, when we say serving the children, are they broken up into grades like we have here in this country, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5?
Yes. Explain a little bit about how the P1 and nursery school.
The way the system is structured, you have the first 3 years in they call it a nursery school, which is a preschool.
Gotcha.
There's a 4K, a 3K, 4K and kindergarten. Then you go to primary, the elementary school. Then you do 6 years in elementary school. After that, you do national examination. Then you go to high school.
Now, that national examination determines whether you get to go to high school, right?
That's correct.
Like this country.
Yeah.
We just shove you on up there even if you're not ready.
Yeah, you have to compete. You get a good grades if you are applying for good high school.
Now, if you want to go to college over there, when you went to the college you went to in Nairobi, did you have to take some other kind of qualifying test?
I had to apply and do some tests because it was a private school.
Oh, I got you.
It was not a public school.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whew. Mm-hmm. So, Jenny, this school that was started, that you all jumped on the project, it started as a little one-room school, and now it's...
That's exactly right. It was one building, and they have added on to it different classrooms. And I'll tell you a really neat story. One of those first years that we were visiting there as a team, Benjamin mentioned the need for nourishment and for food, and he said it would be great if we could get a cow to provide milk for the school children.
What?
So we came back. It was early in the summer, and we raised money that year through VBS to buy a cow. Now, this summer...
Oh, I bet they had some fun with that,
yeah,
didn't they?
This summer I checked. I think they're up to 11 cows now. And they also have chickens.
Chickens.
More than 1,000 chickens, because they provide milk from the cows every day for snack in their porridge. And they also provide an egg a day for the children out of these 1,000 chickens. They're building a bigger chicken coop now.
Phew. You know, one of the things I remember, gosh, I was in Tanzania 20 years ago. I thought the country was beautiful, the people were beautiful, and I remember saying to one of the people there, don't let America come here and Americanize your country. It's just beautiful what you have here. But their standard of living is so much different than what we have here in this country. I mean, you're talking about projects of building schools and whatnot. That's the people doing this. You're not going to see the government stepping in there to build a school, right?
Well, Nyabihu Christian Academy is a private school.
Right.
So, but they do accept kids of different backgrounds into the school.
Right.
So, yes.
But they don't have public schools over there like we have here.
They do have public school, but the number of kids we have, sometimes it's overwhelming to the government because of some of the competing priorities.
Right.
So sometimes the public school, they're good, but sometimes they don't have much resources like at this specific like a private school.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to give people a feel for what the day-to-day life is like in Rwanda.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, we've been having some 100-degree days here, mm-hmm, in South Carolina. Do you ever get 100-degree days in Rwanda?
Never.
Never?
The highs, it's always between like a, depends on where you are. Like a, let's say when you're in the city, it's between like a 60, 55 in the nights, and 85 is the highest it can be. But it also, it's dry, not like a humid.
You don't get the humidity.
Then the more you go toward north, which is the more mountain,
right,
you get cooler. And when you go toward east, because it's kind of a valley, it's like a little bit warmer.
Right.
But it never 90 or 100. It's not something we know.
Let me just say, it was a rude awakening to land in Charlotte, where it's 95 degrees last week. It was a really rude awakening.
Yeah, I had a week out in Jackson Hole to see my brother. When I got off that plane, I went, oh, it was hot. So in Rwanda, do we have things that we take for granted here, for automobiles? Do they have many automobiles in Rwanda?
They are there, but they're not in plenty as here.
Okay.
There are so many people who don't drive. They use public transportation, or they walk, or they use bikes, and they use all kind of small here and there public transportation.
Okay.
So one of the things, whenever JP came and stayed with our family for 6 weeks, he wanted to see a little bit of our town, of course. I took him out in the car, and I said, we're going to drive down Main Street, Rock Hill. And we drove down Main Street, and he looked at me, and he said, where are all the people? I mean, because over there, you walk everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And the people are just everywhere with their baskets and going to market. And you come to America, and everybody's in their buildings.
All right. Do they have what we would call grocery stores over here? Or they just have markets, street markets?
They do. The lifestyle in Rwanda, it's kind of divided in two categories. They are like upper markets, like middle class and all that. They have most of infrastructure we have here. Like they have groceries, they drive, they have internet, they have TV, all kind of things in the city. Then you go outside the city, like in the village, they have this open markets where, like, they bring stuff on the markets every morning, and they have they take care of their animals, and they walk around, and it's totally two different lifestyles. when you look at that.
And the typical housing situation over there? I mean, what's a house like in Rwanda?
We do a lot of home visits, but you have to understand that the places where we go are the most needy, the most vulnerable areas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Those are the children that are served by the school. So in the areas where we go and visit, there are a lot of stone and mud huts. There are some that are out of concrete block in the refugee village, I'm thinking. But most of them are mud huts, stone huts. If the rains come, we saw several cases of where the rains have washed out the mud in some of the houses, so they have holes and need repair.
Right.
So those are some of the situations.
How about medical care? Modern-day medicines. Do we have that in Rwanda? No?
It's a different kind of structure. We don't have a lot. In the city, like as I say, like the life in the city and the life in the villages tend to be different. But the one the government of Rwanda did, they have this universal health care where you pay like a $3 to $5 per person of a medical insurance for per year. The reason why they bring that is because people in the village, they used to be sick because they don't have enough resources. They would think about like, should I buy food or should I go to the clinic? So people would not go to the clinic because they don't have any, they don't want to spend their money in the clinic. So the government have built some clinics in the village. So then they come up with that scheme of universal health care. So that's when they are sick, they are not going to be afraid of going to the clinic. They will get the basic medicine, but not advanced like health care.
Yeah.
But at least there are so many like easy diseases that should not kill people, like malaria and some of the basic needs that you can get the basic medicine. Now people can go to the clinic and get treated on the checked, so they don't have to worry about like, do I have money for food or do I have money for medicine? So that's one of the things, but it's still behind what we have here.
Okay, we need to take our mid-program break. Remind everybody that you are listening to Straight Talk live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax here with Founders. And by Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Good Pharmacy is with us, your hometown pharmacy. Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Okay, we're here in good old America, South Carolina, that'd be, at Substation 2, right across from Winthrop University. We do fresh subs and salads. We do them 6 days a week between 10 in the morning and 9 o'clock at night. How we do it is in the white letters that we're all going to chant out together. Are we ready? One, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice. Slice, slice. Slice.
Got it. Not bad. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI and CN2.
Have you ever wondered why so many people enjoy dining at Substation 2?
Good fresh food, even fresher than Subway, and it's also on a paleo diet.
I like the people. I like the food and being picked on.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
When disaster strikes, one of the most important things is getting life back to normal. A little compassion can go a long way. Paul Davis is here for you. Paul Davis is committed to handling any property damage with exceptional care, because what we do is about more than property. It's about people. We have the training and expertise necessary to completely restore your property fast. For all your cleanup and restoration needs, call the experts at Paul Davis Restoration at 329-1140 or find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
The Piedmont Medical Center Women's Tower at our Rock Hill campus boasts fully furnished labor and delivery rooms and family care suites. Our Level 3 NICU is equipped to provide advanced medical treatments for premature infants and infants who may have complications. Inside the Women's Tower, families begin bonding with their special deliveries in private family care suites, allowing mom and baby to relax with ease. Learn more at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care.
We know the type. You like to start early, finish late, make lemon squares, and make payments to the college fund from anywhere in the house. We know you rely on Comporium for the things you rely on most, like a view of the backyard. That's just a bunny, and hundreds of channels to watch, whenever you want. So you may think of us as just your internet company, but we're more like the I didn't know they could do all that company. Comporium, always ready.
There are lots of reasons why people like dining at Substation 2.
The food, the number 19 is the best.
When I want lunch, I come to Substation 2 because I can't remember never not coming here.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Two very interesting people who live here in Rock Hill who have just returned from Rwanda on a mission trip over there, all part of Neely's Creek Baptist Church. And we have with us Jenny Costner and Jean-Paul Dushime. He is from Uganda, but he's been a citizen here in the United States for 12 or 13 years or something like that.
Right.
Ran into a good old South Carolina girl, and she said, I'm not living in Rwanda. You want me, we're going to be living here. That's pretty much how it went. So, Jenny, we sit here. Every one of us has one of these cell phones in our pocket. It gives us all kinds of answers and solutions to problems. Did you see a lot of that over in Rwanda?
They do have some cell phones there, but I was going to say one other thing that we were talking about, the medical aspect of living in Rwanda, and you know that I do a lot of work for the diabetes community through Breakthrough T1D, and so I got interested several years ago in the fact of type 1 diabetes in Rwanda. JP had a good friend, still has a good friend that lives there, that is an adult, was diagnosed as an adult type 1. So I go and meet with her each time that we go on a trip to just ask about how she is able to access, get the insulin that she needs, the test strips, that kind of thing. And whenever I shared with her several years ago that on my phone I can see what my daughter's blood sugar is over 7,400 miles away from her. And she looked at me and it was like that was all a fairy tale. How can you do that? How do you know what her blood sugar is? So technology is great when it works here in America, but it's a fairy tale in Rwanda. And so things like continuous blood glucose monitors that my daughter wears to let us know what her blood sugar is, that's like a fairy tale there. Insulin pumps, that's like a fairy tale as well. So I was trying to explain all that to her. She's on shots. She's on a very regimented schedule of when she eats and when she gives her insulin. So it's very different. And through the last few years, I've been able to meet with some other folks in the diabetes community. I met with a doctor there this year who was misdiagnosed several times, was taken to witch doctors, was taken to all kinds of healers there in Rwanda without success. And one day he collapsed, and they took him to the hospital. And whenever he woke up, he was diagnosed by a traveling doctor from Kenya. He was diagnosed correctly, finally, as a type 1 diabetic.
Wow.
And it was quite sad because they told his parents at the time, well, it's not curable. We're not going to be able to do anything. They took him out of school for a while because they thought, why are we educating him if he's not going to be able to live that long?
Oh, my.
Very sad.
Ooh.
But he overcame all of that, continued his schooling. Now he is a 27-year-old medical doctor in Rwanda, and he specializes in the treatment of type 1 diabetes.
Isn't that wonderful?
I read about him maybe 2 months before the trip, made some contacts, and they made it happen for him to come and meet with JP and myself one night. His English is very good, and he told his story, and it was just unbelievable.
So this doctor...
Yes.
As diabetic doctor, does he have a vision for what he can do in Rwanda to get it up to speed with where we are here in this country?
He has already participated in a clinical trial for a continuous blood glucose monitor. a couple of years ago, whenever I went over there, I was talking to one of the doctors who goes to conferences, and he was able to get a clinical trial going for the continuous blood glucose monitor. And so this doctor has been able to wear one, and he looked at us across the table and he said, "This has been a life-saving device for me." Because in the middle of the night, it will alarm and let him know that he's got a low blood sugar. So he's very excited about the possibilities. He also runs diabetes camps. I'm going to try to coordinate my dates next summer to go and actually attend his diabetic camp there in Rwanda and meet some others who have type 1.
So now we're morphing from education into medicine, right?
That's correct.
He's got a big smile on his face. You're all for that, right?
Oh, yeah, that guy has quite a story, how he was misdiagnosed and everything, how everything happened. And the passion for him to create awareness of the challenges and this stigma that comes with the disease. He's just working hard to make things, you know, create awareness and make people know exactly that this is a manageable disease. It's possible to have it and continue a normal life, go to school, especially with the young people.
Right.
So here we are back at the education part of it again.
Yep.
And I'm glad you brought us back around to that, because the education is so important, so valuable for the children there in Rwanda. That is one way that they can succeed in life, is by getting their education.
You've got about 30 seconds left. What do you want people to know about Rwanda?
It's a beautiful country. And I just want to say, too, I don't want to leave this out, the YMCA, Lamar Thompson and Upper Palmetto Y, sent a lot of shirts this year to give out. Old camp T-shirts, ones that were not used, string bags from the Y. I want to thank them for doing that. People from our church donated ties, caps. We had a men's conference that our pastor ran concurrent with our VBS this year, and it was just an awesome experience. So thank everyone for sending.
Well, let's thank Neely's Creek Baptist Church for what you've done, your commitment to this mission. It's obviously ongoing. You're going to go back again next year. JP, your family might say hello to you when you come back next time.
Yep.
All right. That's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, Relax Here with Founders, and by Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Okay, one more time, and I expect to hear you bell it out real loud. This is called Fresh Subs and Salads. We do it 6 days a week. How we do it is in the white letters, and I want you to join in. Are you ready now? At the count of three. One, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice.
Not bad. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.